All right. Well, my new optimistic look is that it could have been worse, where I feel like last year I would have been on the should have been better train. So it could have been worse. The Yankees avoid the sweep with a Game 3 victory late in the game. And let's talk about it. Yankees Blue Jays, episode 668 of the podcast. The Yankees were in Toronto, Canada this past week. And they dropped 2 out of 3. They did salvage it with the win again in Game 3. Let's talk. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, RJ Carbone. You are listening to BD4, where there's no better way to get your Yankees and Knicks analysis. We also do MMA. Yanks every series, Knicks every game, MMA on occasion. Let's get to it.
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down, and the game is tied.
I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
The Yankees are champions of baseball.
Shaking and baking. Right here on the neophyte.
Miss you, John. I'm going to miss you. All right, let's get it. Episode 668 of the podcast. Welcome to BD4. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, RJ Carbone. And you are, again, listening to episode 668 of BD4, where there's no better way. To get your Yankees and Knicks analysis, we also do MMA. Yanks every series, Knicks every game, and MMA on occasion. Try my best to find the time to get a UFC 300 episode out. Maybe I can have a guest or two on if I do find the time this weekend. Maybe it'll be next weekend. But we're going to have something hopefully soon. Doing New York Yankees, though, in this episode, man, because, well, that's what we do every series, right? So welcome to the show. I appreciate you tuning in. And the Yanks dropped 2 out of 3 to the Blue Jays. They avoid the sweep, so that's good. They go 13-6. They are now 13-6 overall on the season. Before we start talking about the series itself, let me just take a sip here. John Sterling. It was reported a couple of days ago now that he will be retiring very abruptly. He's going to be retiring on Saturday. Seems like he's called his last game. So this guy is not to be cliche, but he is a legend, not just of the Yankee world, but you know, the impact that Vin Scully had for Dodgers fans and baseball fans. It's very similar when you talk about John Sterling. The guy did it for 35 years, and he went on that streak where he just for decades or for years, over a decade, maybe it was for decades, there was a streak where he didn't miss a single baseball game. You know, and he just... I kind of found the reasoning funny. Once I found out that, you know, Kay said on the show it had nothing to do with his health. Hopefully that's true. Hopefully he is in good health. But once I found out that it was because he was just tired, I thought that was pretty funny. The guy's in his mid-80s, man. And he's just like, hey, you know what? I'm tired. I ain't doing this shit anymore. So I like that. He's earned every bit of that. I'm assuming he... You know, part of it was he doesn't want the whole farewell tour because, you know, John Sterling announces that he's going to retire at the end of the year. he's going to have to go through a whole thing. And I'm sure at that age, you don't want to have to deal with all that speeches and ceremonies. And every time you go, you know, it's a lot. So it's crazy, man. It's crazy that the guy, he's the voice of the Yankees. And this is a guy we all grew up with. If you're around my age, I'm 29 on Sunday. So I have been listening to Sterling my whole life. I watch every Yankees game, so I don't listen on the radio a ton. But over the last couple of years, because of my job that I got, the new job that I have over the last couple of years, I work the night shift. I work in the afternoon, and then I get off at about 7 or 8 p.m. So at the end of my shift, I'm listening to the Yankee game, and I'm listening to Sterling. And on my commute home, I'm listening to Sterling. And I get home around the fifth inning usually, fourth inning maybe, and I watch the rest of the game there. So, like, Sterling's become a big part of me, of my experience as a Yankees fan later in life. So, like, last couple years, really, it's been where I've been, like, listening to Sterling a lot. So, it sucks to see it go now. I don't, you know, obviously Susan Waldman's still doing her thing, but I'm assuming it's going to be Justin Shackle taking over. In fact, it is, I think. But yeah, John Sterling is a legend. You know, for all those who don't know who he is, I don't know where you've been living, but he's legendary, right? Excuse me. His calls, you know, his home run calls obviously are interesting. His Yankees win call has been iconic. It's part of this intro to the podcast. You know, just he's funny. He's unintentionally funny sometimes. Obviously, the whole foul ball thing, that was hilarious when he gets hit in the head and he still just still continues to call the game. You know, he's had some fun screw ups over the years where I'm sure if you're listening on the radio in the car and he calls a home run and it's not a home run, you probably want to drive off a fucking bridge. But, like, it's all part of the John Sterling experience, man, and that's what makes him so great. He just such an unique personality, and he's brought so much to Yankees fans. So I wish him nothing but the best, and again, I hope that his retirement is well, and I hope that he's in good health. As far as the Yankees go, nothing really to report on in terms of, like, in-house stuff. DJ LeMahieu is expected to start a rehab assignment this weekend, so that's the last step before he returns to the team. Not sure how I feel about that. Just hope they don't turn him into an everyday player. Then again, Gleyber Torres is a cesspool. Gerrit Cole threw 2 days in a row. Do what you want with that information. Tommy Canley threw again, but it doesn't seem like he's really progressed. So, I don't know. And then the Yankees claimed this outfielder from the waivers. They claimed Taylor Trammell, from waivers. Don't know much about him other than the fact that he is a 26-year-old left-handed hitter. Who can't hit, but he's got some pop in the bat. So that's what the Yankees are looking at, the lefty slug. Not much of an MLB track record, played a few seasons with Seattle, and I think played a few games with the Dodgers this season already. And to make room for him on the roster, Kevin Smith was DFA'd. So there's that. Let's talk about the important shit. Let's get to the series. Let's recap each game. Hand out our, salute our caps, tip our caps, and then we'll talk about a few storylines and go over a few talking points, and then that'll be that. So let's get to it all here in episode 668 of the podcast when we return from our first break. Stay with us.
Hey there. Thanks for listening in so far. If you enjoy this episode, please give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're on YouTube, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Thanks so much.
All right. Let's get to game one of this series. The first game of this series, where the Yankees again dropped 2 out of 3, they lost to the Blue Jays 3-1 This was the right-hander Luis Gil going up against the right-hander Chris Bassett. This was Jackie Robinson Day. I always like 42 Day, man. It's cool that everybody wears the number 42. It's nice to see that. Oh, I think it was either last season or the season before where they actually have the blue coloring and the font of the Dodger 42 on the jersey. They made it more unique to Jackie Robinson, which is awesome. But yeah, it's an awesome day, man. It's a day to reflect and for us to realize how fortunate we are that this game has everybody and the unity of it is amazing. And I saw a photo on Instagram earlier today of, was it Jackie's daughter? No, I just had to look it up. It was his widow. It was his widow. It's his widow who's 101 years old. Excuse me. And she's still going to games. And, you know, when I saw that photo, man, like the one thing I thought of was like, I mean, I'm sure she likes the sport of baseball. I would bet that she goes to the games and she just sits there and she just like, again, 101 years old, you've been around and you've been through a lot of shit. You've been through that era. She probably sits there watching these games, just like admiring where we've gotten to, how far we've come, and seeing, again, the unity that's here now. I can imagine just like as a 101-year-old human being going through all that shit and having to deal with all that and just being the widow of Jackie Robinson. She's watching these games with a completely different view of the average baseball fan and any baseball fan, but she's watching it just like at peace. I don't know how to explain it. It's going to sound weird probably once I drop this recording, but like, I just feel like she watches this and she's just like, wow, how far have we come, you know? And it's awesome. So this was Jackie Robinson Day. Again, the Yankees lose 3-1, Gil versus Bassett. Top of the second inning, you got the Oswaldo Cabrera RBI single to put the Yanks up 1-0. But in the bottom of the second, the Jays answer back when it's IKF with a walk that scores a run. Then you got the Luis Gil wild pitch to Springer. We'll talk about Gil's outing. It's 2-1. Bottom of the third, Kirk rips the RBI double, 3-1. That'd be it. 3-1 was the final. The Yankee bats could not do a damn thing. One run on four hits, all of them singles, just one walk, struck out six times, and they were 1-for-5 with runners in scoring position. Yeah, Chris Bassett, they only got one run on him, and that was in 6 3rd innings. He's a solid pitcher who's had a solid career. He's consistently, I feel like he's been decent every year, so tough to not hit him. You were hoping that the Yankees would get to the Toronto bullpen, which they usually do, but they scored no runs in their 2 2/3 innings. They actually went 0-for-11, the Yankee bats did, to end the game, so that was rough. The only guys with hits, you had four. Oswaldo was 1-for-3, RBI. Volpe, 1-for-4. Glaber, 1-for-3. Made another pathetic error, an unofficial error. Verdugo, 1-for-3. Grisham was 0-for-2 with a walk. Soto was 0-for-3 in this game with a walk. And then Wells was 0-for-3. Judge, 0-for-4. Rizzo, 0-for-4. Another error for him, an unofficial error. And then he rounded into a double play. So, rough night. yeah, Luis Gil. I don't know if I've ever seen a line like this. I mean, I probably haven't. Because this, I think he made history. I don't know the exact stat. But he wasn't great. Yet, he still finished with a line that looks fine. 5 innings, 3 runs. He allowed 3 hits, but he walked 7 batters to 6 strikeouts, no home runs, and he threw 99 pitches, got the loss. Yeah, his fastball command, fastball control, total fucking mess. Missing high, missing wide. He wasn't close to the zone. And he was shying away from his slider for the fastball. He barely threw the slider. He threw a slider to Biggio that got ripped for a double. But then he threw on to Turner, to Justin Turner, and he got a strikeout off it. But he really didn't throw it much else. He was mainly fastball. In the second inning, he went more to the changeup, but that wasn't working either. And it just kept going back to that fastball, which just would not hit a single spot. And I think that's becoming a mental thing with him. Because you can go back to his last start when Angel Hernandez was behind the dish. It's like it was very similar in this game where you can tell that one missed call kind of takes a hit on his confidence. He's got to work on his composure a little bit because that might be what unravels him at times. I can just see by watching him the body language after he throws a couple of balls, it's not great. So as a young pitcher, that is totally normal. It's something I dealt with when I used to pitch in my days. But yeah, he had 7 walks. And then he probably would have had even more traffic on the bases had the Yankees not helped him out, right? And the Jays helping him out, like Kevin Kiermaier was going out of the zone swinging. Bo Bichette got picked off at first base. You know, he got a couple of ground ball double plays. So it was ugly. I think the only clean 1-2-3 inning that Luis Gil recorded was the 4th inning. But, like, yeah, he gets a couple, 2 consecutive walks to Springer and Vlad in the 1st. 2nd inning, he lets up the leadoff double, and then it's walk, walk, walk to the 6, 7, 8 hitters. Settled in a little bit after that, you know, gets to the 5th inning, walks 2 more, and is able to complete 5 with, again, only 3 runs allowed. But it was bad. It was hard to watch. You know, and it just goes back to what I keep saying. I think this guy, he's young. Maybe he can learn to harness his stuff. I still think he's best off in relief than as a starting pitcher. Now, maybe the extra day's rest threw him off, right? With the doubleheader in the previous series, I think he had 7 days of rest. So that can throw a pitcher off. You know, pitchers are creatures of habit, so maybe, but he's an enigma, man, because he's got such, and when I say unhittable stuff, I'm not exaggerating. Like, nobody can hit his stuff. His slider's got movement. His changeup can be filthy. Would like a little more separation from the fastball, but the fastball is just so fucking electric. He can throw that shit right down the plate, middle cut. Nobody's going to touch it. Nobody can touch it. It's such a good pitch. It just, he needs command of it. He just can't command it. And the more games we get like this where he's not able to command the fastball, you're going to get your bullpen out there and they're just going to be taxed by before summer. I mean, in this game, Luis Gil allowed 10 base runners in 5 innings. And he only allowed 3 runs to score. That's actually impressive. You know, he kind of reminds me of Francisco Liriano, who was another pitcher who he didn't throw as hard, but he had some great stuff with movement. He would have games where he would have no command. He would walk 5, 6, 7 batters. So, I don't know. Just going to have to keep going out there. And his next start is on, I think it's Sunday, which is the game I'm going to, so we'll see. The bullpen in this game, 3 innings, no runs. Marinaccio threw 2 innings, no runs in the 6th and 7th inning he pitched. And then Santana came in for the 8th inning, no runs. That's the first game where the Yankees, again, lose 3-1. The second game of the series, the Yankees would lose 5-4. The lefty Rodon versus the lefty Kikuchi. Top of the 2nd. You get Jose Trevino ripping an RBI single. Giancarlo Stanton from 2nd base. Rojas gives him the okay. He gives him the green light. Stanton is out by at least 10 fucking feet. I mean, he's midway down the line. and you already, and the catcher is just like about to catch it. He catches it, drops it, and then a few seconds later, Stanton finally crosses the plate. I 1-0 Yankees. Maybe we'll get to that later. Bottom three, what's his name? Justin Turner, the sack fly to tie the game. Fourth inning, Vlad, 2-run single, 3-1. Bottom six, Nick Birdie's in the game at this point. Gleyber Torres makes another error. It's 5-1 Toronto. It's starting to get out of hand. Top seven, though, Jose Trevino, another RBI. Oswaldo Cabrera, a sack fly. It's 5-3. Ninth inning comes. The Yankees still fighting. Trevino, another RBI. 5-4. But they cannot complete the comeback, and that'd be the final score. Carlos Rodon finishes this game with four innings. Three runs, five hits, four walks, five strikeouts. No home runs allowed. Get this, 101 pitches, and he gets the loss. This guy, at some point, is going to have to consistently give the Yankees some length. He's the guy that's making the most money in the rotation right now. This is the guy who the Yankees paid $162 million because they expected him to be the ace right behind Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole's not here. So now we need Carlos Rodon to perform like an ace. And he's having trouble with command. The command issues with him. It remains a problem. He had no location with the fastball, especially against the top of the Blue Jays lineup. In the first inning, he struggled with command. In the third inning, he had the same troubles with his command against the top of the lineup. A lot of walks, a lot of traffic on the bases, very similar to last season. Now, the good thing is his pitch mix was still pretty diverse. He went to his bag, a little bit of changeup, a lot of bit of cutter, but he's not finishing batters off still. They're deep counts, long at-bats. I don't know. He just needs to work through it. I want him to still keep mixing it up. Like, don't shy away from your pitch mix. Keep going back to different pitches. Don't go back into your comfort zone. Keep mixing in cutter, changeup to that fastball slider sequence. You know, because, listen, I know he was a two-pitch pitcher when he had his big contract year with the Giants, but, like, that doesn't mean it's going to continue to work that way. You know, because as you age, you're going to lose a little more velo on the fastball and, you know, repetition sometimes. You don't want to become too predictable. You know, you want to, I think that's important to mix it in because he also pitched in an entirely different league. He went from Chicago, the White Sox, to the Giants. So those hitters didn't see what he had. And so he was able to get away with it. So I still want him to go deeper into his bag. I would like to see him mix in the changeup more, you know, get a better feel for that pitch. But yeah, at the end of the day, he's fastball reliant, right? He's going to mix in some pitches. He's still going to be fastball reliant. He's 60% fastball, give or take. That's fine. If you're locating the fastball, that's fine. But he's not. He's not out there dotting the fastball left and right. He's inconsistent with that heater. And that's a problem because you need your fastball location for your off speed to work. It plays off of that pitch. And so he's not exactly had consistent command. And so four starts into his 2024, he's had three underwhelming ones and one good. And that one good was against a garbage lineup in the Miami Pistons, as I call them. So, I need Carlos Rodon to start pitching like an ace. You know? His ERA jumped to 3.66, I think it is. That's also with, they took away the Rizzo error from his previous start in Miami. So, that run that was officially unearned was changed to earned. So, that's why the ERA jumped more than it looked like it should have. Bullpen in this game, 4 innings, 2 runs. Luke Weaver, an inning and a third, 2 more runs, 2 hits. 5th inning, he pitched the entire 5th and some of the 6th. This guy, it feels like he allows a run every time he pitches. I'm not impressed with his stuff. I don't know. I'm impressed with Nick Birdie's stuff. I thought Birdie looked okay. Inning and 2/3, no runs, couple walks, 3 hits. But he's got good stuff, and I think he's a guy who could be a weapon for the Yankees. He pitched the 6th and 7th, and then Gonzalez got the 8th. No runs, a walk. The bats in this game, game 2, 4 runs on 6 hits, 3 extra base hits, 2 walks, 10 strikeouts. They were 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position. Against Yusei Kikuchi, they scored just 1 run on him in 6 innings. This guy's a good pitcher, man. You know, I know he's had some inconsistency so far in his career, but I think the last season, now this season, he might have found something, and he might be turning into the guy that the Blue Jays initially thought they were getting. He's good. You know, the Yankees can't solve him. He's got a very good curveball, so he's able to neutralize Yankee lefties. He hides the ball very well when he's lefty on lefty. It's hard to pick that up. He's tough. The Toronto pen, they got to them. The Yankees scored 3 runs on the bullpen in 3 innings. You know, Verdugo was 2-for-4 with a couple doubles. Trevino, 1-for-4. He had all 3 RBIs in this game. Did he? No, he had 3 RBIs. Oswaldo had the other RBI. He was 1-for-3 with a double. Soto and Stanton, 1-for-4. Gleyber, 0-for-1, couple walks, hit by a pitch. More pathetic defense twice. He has the mistake throw to third base, which he probably shouldn't have threw that ball. And then later he makes the error on that stolen base where it pops out of his glove. So, Volpe was 0-for-4, Golden Sombrero, 4 strikeouts. Judge, 0-for-4, Rizzo, 0-for-4. That's game 2. Let's get to game 3. More exciting game. 6-4 win in game 3 for the Yankees. This was Marcus Stroman going up against Kevin Gausman, 2 righties. Last time the Yankees got to Gausman. This game, not as much. Bottom 2nd, Varsho, 2-run home run off of a 1-2 count sinker from Stroman. It's 2-0. Top of the 5th inning, Soto rips an RBI double, 2-1. Bottom 7 was the next score when Varsho gets his 2nd home run on the game on a cutter away from Ferguson. Solo shot, and then Bichette with the sack fly off Ian Hamilton after that to make it 4-1. Top of the 8th, Juan Soto gets the Yankees started with a solo home run off a heater, and it's 4-2. 9th inning comes. You get the Giancarlo Stanton leadoff home run off of Swanson. That one traveled deep. Then you get Jose Trevino pinch hitting, and he picks up an RBI infield single off of the left-hander Meza. We'll talk about that. Then Toronto manager Schneider. Schneider chooses to pitch around Juan Soto to face Aaron Judge. And he also stuck with the lefty pitcher over going to one of his righties in, let's say, Bowden. So he goes lefty on righty with Judge. He chooses to pitch around Soto to get to Judge. Stays with a lefty on him. And then Judge, I forget what the count was, but he gets a sinker low and in. And he rips a 2-run base hit down the line. And that makes it 6-4. Bottom 9 comes. You got Clay Holmes in, gets 2 outs. There's a runner on 2nd base, I think. Vlad hits one up the middle. Volpe makes an excellent play, stabs at the ball, picks it, spins, throws to first, and gets flat out by about, I don't know, 20 feet. That felt good seeing that. So Holmes gets the save. Talk about Stroman later. Three and two-thirds innings, two runs for the pen. Ferguson, one inning, two runs. Hamilton, one and one-third, no runs. Gonzalez, a third of an inning, no runs, got the win. And then Holmes, an inning, a hit, a run, no runs, sorry, and the save. The bats, six runs on 11 hits, five of them extra base hits, four walks, 11 strikeouts, three double plays hit into, and then they were 3 for 11 with runners in scoring position. Versus Gausman, only one run in five innings. And then versus the Toronto pen, again, they're getting to them, five runs in four innings. Soto was 3 for 5, double, homer, two walks, two RBIs. Oswaldo, 2 for 4, double. Stanton, 1 for 3, home run, walk, RBI. Verdugo, 1 for 4, double. Judge, 1 for 5, two RBIs. Glaber was 1 for 4, Rizzo, 1 of 5, Wells 0 for 2 at a walk, Volpe 0 for 5. He had a tough series. Trevino 1 for 1 with the RBI. That was a decision I thought was interesting and I was cool with. Late in the game there, you know, Jose Trevino choosing to pinch hit over Austin Wells, which it was a right-handed pitcher on the mound when Boone made that decision. Then he went to a lefty after Boone had opted for Trevino. So Aaron Boone chose to go with the hot hand here in this situation over going with the matchup advantage. Could have went lefty on righty, ended up going righty on righty because Jose Trevino has been hitting. I actually like that move. I was talking to my brother during this, and I was talking to him before we even got to that decision. I'm asking him, I'm like, do you think they're going to go Trevino here because Wells hasn't hit for shit? And he's like, you know what? You might have to. Because I like Wells. I like the upside, but he has not done anything. He's looked, I don't want to say he's looked lost because he's had some good at-bats. He's made some good contact, but he hasn't produced shit. So Boone went to Trevino. And despite the righty-on-righty, Trevino came through. So it was a good move, I thought. And that was Game 3, where the Yankees salvaged the series with a big win late in the game, showing fight. Let's talk about a few things. All right, so let's get to a few topics as soon as we return here from our second break here on episode 668 of BD4. Stay with us. Lots to talk about. Be right back.
You can follow us on social media as well. On Instagram, we're at BD4Pod and at Rob J. Carbone. On X, we're at BD4Pod and at RJCBD4. And on Facebook, we're BD4.
All right. Welcome back to the show. Episode 668 of the podcast. I think I want to start real briefly again. I think we talked about it last episode. The Yankee infield defense is kind of becoming a problem. And it scares me because I was listening to that interview where, you know, Boone's on John Boy every week. And he was telling John Boy, I think the defense is good and I think it's going to improve. Now, you can have your... Listen, maybe it does improve, right? Now, Glaber's a disaster. He's always been. But at least with Rizzo, there's a track record of him being a very good first baseman. But, like, it's not the mentality I want to hear. Because last year, they did say the same thing. They kept insisting that these guys are pros. They're this, they're that. And it's going to come. And then they were awful. I'm hoping behind closed doors, the Yankees are working on this. And they see it as more of an issue as they're letting on. Because it is a problem, and the defense has not been good. It's been very bad. I don't care what any metric you look at, outs above average, defensive run saved, range factor, whatever the fuck you want to tell me. Watch the baseball games, take away your iPad, and tell me, did you think the Yankees played good defense today? They haven't been playing good defense. It's bad. They're giving away runs. They're giving away games because of it, you know? And when you have a bullpen that struggles to get strikeouts and all they do is generate ground balls, you need this infield to turn those ground balls into twos. And they're not turning double plays. They're not fielding ground balls. They're dropping easy throws and catches and pop-ups. You got Rizzo out here dropping everything, missing scoops. He missed that fly ball in foul territory. Tougher play, but still, that's a play he usually makes. I'm a little worried there. I hope it's not concussion related with Anthony Rizzo. You know, I don't know. Obviously, I'm no doctor, but like maybe his depth perception's off. You know, maybe the vision's still a little bit fucked up from that head injury from the Tatis injury incident. I don't know. And you got Glaber just being Glaber. He makes stupid mistakes constantly. That's the story of Glaber Torres in the infield. The catching, I guess, has been better defensively of late. They're still being ran all over. The guys are stealing left and right off Trevino and Wells because neither of them have arms. Christ, am I fucking slurring words tonight? I guess Cabrera has been okay at third. But yeah, it's Torres, it's Rizzo. Volpe's had some problems with his transfers, but overall he's been good at shortstop, and I think he'll improve there. But the defense has been a fucking problem, and if you can't fix that fundamental of the game, again, with this pitching staff that generates a lot of ground balls, even the starting rotation, I don't know if I see this team taking a next step, because that's something that you have to have down. And then on the other side of the diamond, you know, those same guys making errors have got to find consistency, along with Aaron Judge, right? But the Yankees need some of these guys to start hitting because their offense has been up and down. The Yankees need Gleyber Torres, Anthony Rizzo, and Aaron Judge to really start hitting. Those are the three guys I'm looking at, right? Because you look at this series, the at-bats were a lot less competitive. Shorter at-bats, Volpe cooled off. But I'm not worried about any of that because the at-bats have been elite all year. Volpe was bound to cool off. He was batting over 400. It's just called variance. And I don't think it has anything to do with him in the leadoff spot. That was a thing that I was expecting. You know, it just happens to be in the leadoff spot where he's cooled off from 400 because nobody's going to do that. But, like, Rizzo and Glaber are starting to piss me off and worry me, should I say. Glaber's a fucking disaster right now. Like, he's having a disastrous start to his season. Now, it's April 18th, you know? But, like, knowing who Glaber Torres is, he's never been a quote-unquote baseball player. He's a guy who relies a lot on his hot bat to be effective. So when he's not going at the plate, it looks fucking ugly, you know, and you can tell he's a body language guy. You could see the confidence his shot. You could see him take his struggles out to the field. That's been a thing his entire career. So I don't know what the fuck is going to happen with him. Is it because he's in a contract year? I don't want to go down this whole thing rabbit hole again, but like, you know, I was all for moving Gleyber Torres last trade deadline when there were the Arias rumors that came up, right? I don't know why they would do that now. You know, Arias is under team control. Gleyber Torres is now a rental. Miami's not going to pay him. They're cheap. But like last year at the time, Miami was offering young, controllable starting pitching. And Glaber, still at the time, had a year and a half left on his deal. I feel like they should have struck a deal then. But now, it's a little too late because Glaber's expiring. He's got low value at the moment. And, you know, with the deadline not until August, every team thinks they're going to make the playoffs now with this new format. So they're going to give it a run the entire year. And it's like, well, you kind of miss your window. But again, he's here. That's a different day. Gleyber Torres is here, and the Yankees need him to start fucking hitting the ball. He's dropping his back shoulder again, leading to a lot of pop-ups, soft contact. He still doesn't have a single home run on the season. I just worry because we've seen this before, 2 and 3 years ago, where he just vanished, lost all of his pop. So it's a possibility that could be one of those years, especially in a contract year. You have to think, is he pressing a little bit? We'll see. Now, Rizzo, a little more concerning because he's older and he's coming off that concussion. Again, I'm hoping that's not affecting it, but it doesn't seem like he's got any pop left in his bat. He's only hitting singles up there. He has 2 extra base hits all season. He's supposed to be the Yankees' lefty with thump in the middle of that order. They haven't gotten any pop from him. And it sucks because I'm asking for one more decent season from him because his contract's up at the end of the year. He's off the books. So it would be nice to just get one more. But he's not turning on pitches. He's not really driving the ball. It's a lot of weak contact base hits. You know, and I've noticed a trend that, like, at least in this series, the Blue Jays were pitching backwards to him. So they were going soft early, fastball late. And that threw him off. So he's hitting the ball somewhat consistently, but it's just not Anthony Rizzo-like. There's no power there, and that needs to come. Hopefully, Aaron Judge is starting to come around because it's getting a little late for him. You know, we'll be coming up on a month into the season in a week, and Aaron Judge is, you know, batting .182. He's just taking a lot of fastballs. He's taking. Excuse me. He's taking until he gets 2 strikes. I'm noticing that. He's not swinging up there until it gets to 2 strike count. I think he's trying way too hard to walk. You know, Soto's been rubbing off on a lot of guys in a positive way. But, like, I want something. Like, Judge is here to mash. We need Judge out there swinging for 60. Like, you know, like, and I just hope it's not anything related to the oblique. You know, I don't want that to be a reason that's like preventing him from swinging. Because you saw the third inning of this game, of Wednesday's game, he gets a 2-0 pitch where usually Aaron Judge, when he's right, is mashing that shit 470. Didn't happen. So I'm hoping that last at bat there in the ninth inning was a very good sign, and he's going to build off of that because we need Aaron Judge. Now, like, I'm not saying this, like, this is where people get caught up in narratives. The Yankee lineup isn't like it was last year. They're not going where Aaron Judge goes. They haven't produced a ton, and Aaron Judge hasn't produced a ton. But also, it's been other guys around Judge, which is why it's been so lackluster. It's been Judge, him, you know, it's not just Aaron Judge. And the good thing is this lineup, for as much as it's been inconsistent, they're still top 10, borderline top 10 in a lot of offensive categories, you know. So my ask entering the year, my expectation was that this lineup would produce a top 7 offense. So I'm hoping, like, as the weather starts to warm, that they really start hitting. But, like, it's let's go. You know, hopefully this is it. Because there's no way that a lineup like this on paper should not produce top 7 offense. There's no excuse for that. And I don't care that they've saw some good pitching so far. It's supposed to be the opposite way around. They're supposed to mash that good pitching, and that, you know, opposing pitchers are supposed to say, well, we faced a good lineup. That's the way it should be. That's how good this lineup is supposed to be on paper. They're supposed to produce a lot more. So it starts with Judge, but you also need Rizzo. You also need Torres to be effective too. Now, the catchers aren't hitting right now. I don't expect them to. I don't expect a lot from catcher. Nobody should. Trevino has been better. He's 6 for 12. in his last four games with five RBIs, a home run, a walk. That's nice. Wells hasn't hit a lick. It'd be nice to get some production from him. Verdugo's been coming around slowly but surely, right? The at-bats are good. He's been coming through late in games. The doubles are there. That's what a lot of us asked for. And his numbers right now on the season are right on cue with his career numbers. Outside of that 240 batting average, the OPS is there. The OPS plus is a 100. That's where he's been. Like, he's doing what Verdugo did with Boston. So I don't know if you can expect a ton more from him. He's going to hit at an average to an above average clip. That's what he's doing. Giancarlo Stanton. Let's talk about Stanton because he's doing good, man. Stanton's quietly been hitting this year, right? I could say quietly been hitting. It's been good. And the Yankees are taking, they're trying to take care of him, right? He's getting DH only days. They're load managing him, right? They're giving him multiple days off, which I'm fine with. And they're telling him, you know, not to run, basically, because that, again, that fucking play earlier in the series where he's rounding third, much, much like the one from last year that kind of went viral when he was out there walking home. Very similar. But he's hitting. He's hitting the ball. And at this point in his career, that's all I care about. I just need production from Giancarlo. And we're getting that. He's slugging fastballs again. And it seems like he's, again, you heard in spring training, he kind of tweaked his mechanics. And you could see it. You go on Baseball Savant, you can read it. His launch angle, like he's flattened out the swing a little bit. The launch angle this year is in single digits versus the last 3 years. It's been for anywhere from 10 to 12 degrees. This year, it's 7.8 degrees. So he's a guy where he hits the ball hard enough to where he doesn't need to have a higher trajectory on his swing path. You know, flattening his swing, I think, is going to help him try and make contact through the zone, try and make more contact in the strike zone. And he's, I saw a side-by-side. It seems like his hands are a lot closer to his body. That's to be able to get out in front earlier on fastballs, and turn on balls more clearly, more cleanly. So the crouch stance, you could see he's less upright. He's a little more crouched down. A little more weight on the backside, too. So there are some changes in his mechanics that hopefully are leading to this production that we're getting from Giancarlo Stanton. So that's good to see. I'm happy that Stanton's producing, and he's not totally dead. So that's a positive. Let's talk a little more, and we'll hand out our tip of the caps. We'll tip our caps to a few guys when we return from break. Stay with us here on episode 668 of BD4.
If you're interested in our website, just go to www.bd4blog.com. You can subscribe to our blog on there right on the front page. Just like on the podcast, we cover Yankees, Knicks, and MMA. Also on our website are the links to the different platforms for the podcast. Thanks so much.
Okay, welcome back to the show, episode 668 of the podcast, episode 668. Whoops. Let's tip our caps. We'll start in the rotation. Let's do that. Starting in the rotation, this series, getting our salute is, that's not the right one. Yep. Marcus Stroman. I'm tipping my cap to Marcus Stroman in this series. 5 1/3 innings in game 3. 2 runs, 2 strikeouts, a couple walks. 99 pitches and the no decision. Yeah. He was good, man. He's, you know, talk about a value contract. This is a good example. But nothing but consistent. He's come here and he's done everything he's been asked to do. Precisely. And he's just been so consistent. His worst start was last time out when he gave them a chance to win the game. And he's been the only Yankee pitcher who's been able to, you know, outside of that one fluke start from Nestor, to give the Yankees some sort of length. He's gone 5-6 innings consistently. He's pitching into the sixth. So that's, I expect this to continue. I said entering the season he's going to have a really good year for the Yankees. So I wouldn't be shocked if he has a better year than the numbers say. He's so enjoyable to watch. You know, anybody who's played baseball at a competitive level before, no matter what level, just played baseball and organized, you know, anybody who's played in an organized baseball league growing up, anybody who has pitched, you know what I'm talking about when I say Marcus Stroman is very enjoyable to watch pitch. Especially for me, because I was never a high velo guy either. I relied on movement and location. And so watching Stroman go out there and pitch and mix and match and elevate and go side to side, go low, like it's fun. It's an art form. Him, the way he's able to work with Austin Wells this year has been fun to watch. You got Austin Wells setting up way outside to set up the at-bat. Right, Stroman's going two-seam and changeup that clips the outer lower portion of the plate against right-handed batters. And then he'll go way outside with the curveball. He got Vladimir Guerrero swinging and missing at that, chasing. It's really cool to watch him pitch and just treat this like a chess match. So I'm tipping my cap to Marcus Stroman for getting his third now. He's got his third cap tip of the season. So he's 1-1 on the season. And across four starts, he's got a 2.42 ERA. Good for him. Marcus Stroman, tipping my cap to you again for the third time this year. Let's go to Juan Soto and give him our salute. Juan Soto, tipping my cap to him. 4-for-10 this series. Batted 400. With a 1339 OPS in the series, a double, a home run, two RBIs, three walks, one strikeout, one run scored, 18 total bases. What else is there to say? He's been awesome. Again, him too. That's the third time I'm tipping my cap to him this season. He is so cool, man. It's must-watch TV when Juan Soto's in the box. He's got so much confidence when he's in the batter's box. It's like he fucking owns the place. I mean, if you watch this guy and you had no idea how old he was, you would watch him and you'd think he'd be a seasoned vet. He is so much more mature as a hitter than any other 25-year-old I've ever seen. Just the professional at-bats, the competitive at-bats, right? I mean, he's up there toying with pitchers, laughing, mocking them, telling umpires how to do their job. He's got this little thing with umps where he's always talking to them. He's like, well, you're not, I know better than you. I know the zone, but I'll let you take that one. Like, he's such, like, talk about maturity. He's up there playing chess in the batter's box. Like, he's intentionally taking pitches to get the pitcher thinking, like, oh, okay. But, like, he's doing things on purpose to set you up. It's insane. And he's like, again, the man got intentionally walked to get to Aaron Judge on Wednesday. That's insane. So, like, the Yankees, they feed off it, man. The fight they've been showing late in games this season, even in some of their losses, I don't think that's a coincidence. I think Juan Soto has a lot to do with that. They're watching every at-bat of his closely. And he's worth every penny, by the way. He's worth every penny and then some. I saw a tweet on the old X. And couldn't believe what I saw. It's something along the lines of, I know Juan's got good numbers, but I don't think he's worth 600. First of all, when your numbers are this efficient, there is no, I know his numbers are good, but it ends there. Because his numbers on the year, let's see if I can pull them up, just fucking absurd. Here we are. He's batting in 19 games, 352, with a 478 on base. 17 RBIs, 18 walks, 11 strikeouts in 19 games. Four doubles, four home runs. The OPS sits at 1055. That's pretty fucking valuable to me. Like, and it's like, it's the things that you might not see if you're not watching as a student of the game. If you're just watching casually, you might feel differently. But if you watch closely to his at-bats, you see the value. You know what I'm talking about. You see, oh, I get it. You know? And like, you need to have known who Juan Soto was before the Yankees got him. Because like, if you're one of those people who are critiquing Sal Licata, that he's taking too many pitches, which I knew that was going to come at some point from people. This is who he is. The man, listen, anything to get on base, I'm for. You know, I'm all money ball. Like, the third inning on Wednesday, he takes a heater right down the pipe on a 1-0 count. I get that. I get how it can be annoying at times. But why does it matter when he's... You know what I think it is? I think it's the fact that Aaron Judge isn't hitting behind him yet. And so once Judge does start to take off, hopefully he does, people aren't even going to think about this shit. They're not even going to think to complain about Juan Soto taking pitches. You also got to remember, just because he looks like a seasoned vet, it doesn't mean he is. He's still growing. He's still developing. The guy is 25 years old. His prime isn't even close to here yet. Most guys' primes are 28, 29, 30, 31, 32. Like, he's 25. So, it's crazy. What else? And by the way, you know, speaking of complaints, we all expect the defense to be a problem. Not a problem, but to be bad. It's been pretty good. He had another outfield assist in this series. I think he's tied for first in the league. So, Juan Soto's cool. More than cool. Let's go to the bullpen. Clay Holmes. Tipping my cap to Clay Holmes. Pitch game 3. An inning. No runs. A hit. Save. Quietly continues to do his thing. I'll give him credit. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of him as a closer, but he's got a 0 ERA right now, knock on wood. Off to another hot start, like he was in that one year where he had like a 0.25 in the first half. And you've been getting less, you know, cardiac Clay or heart attack Holmes. You've been getting less of that lately. He's been a lot more efficient. So it's all about that slider command to get to that sinker, vice versa. Good for Clay. Up next, we have the Tampa Bay Rays at Yankee Stadium. The 11-9 third place Rays come to town. You know, you could throw that out though, because they always play the Yankees tough. But they are dealing with a lot of injuries this year. They're not producing much offense this season. I know they hit a lot of singles, but they don't walk. They don't hit for any kind of power. And they just don't score runs. So that's not been a strength for them. The pitching for them has been pretty bad. Like, the rotation's been fine, but their bullpen has been pretty horrendous. They put a lot of traffic on the bases, and they allow a lot of runs to score. Pete Fairbanks had a pretty fucking interview, pretty funny fucking interview the other day. I saw on last night, I think it was, Talking Baseball posted it. Check out Pete Fairbanks' interview. He gave up a couple runs and put a bunch of traffic on the bases, and they asked him about his outing, and he's just like an all-encompass suck. It was really funny. But Tampa's up next. You got Clark Schmidt tomorrow, Then it's Nestor versus Eflin, lefty versus righty on Saturday. That's John Sterling Day. And then on Sunday, 1 p.m. game as well, Luis Gil, the right-hander, going up against Aaron Civale, also a right-hander. Didn't realize he was not with Cleveland anymore. Maybe I did. I just don't remember. But, yeah, that's going to be a fun matchup. I'm going to that game, so should be fun. That's it. That's all we got. Let's head to our final break, and when we return, we will get to our trivia, and that'll be that. Stay with us here. Episode 668 of BD4. Be right back. Studio 69 Productions is a podcast production agency created by Leo Rodriguez to allow content creators to market their podcast. It's an online platform that will market your podcast or any other project that you're working on. Get in touch with Leo Rodriguez from Studio 69 Productions. You can find Studio 69 Productions on Instagram at Studio69NJ. Studio 69 Productions, where dreams are heard and born.
Thanks for listening to BD4, where there is no better way to get your Yankees and Knicks analysis. We also do MMA, Yanks every series, Knicks every game, and MMA on occasion.
All right. Whoa. All right, welcome back to the show, episode 668 of the podcast. Let's wrap this thing up with our trivia question, and that will be that. Okay. For this episode, episode 668 of BD4, our NYK MMA trivia question of the day is, against which team did Maris hit the most home runs in 1961 when he broke Ruth's record? Washington, Detroit, or Chicago? All right. Against which team did Maris hit the most home runs in 1961 when he broke Ruth's record? Washington, Detroit, or Chicago? All right, one final time. Against which team did Maris hit the most home runs in 1961 when he broke Ruth's record? Washington, Detroit, or Chicago? Which of those three? Let me know the answer wherever you can reach me if you get the answer correct. I'll give you a shout out in the next episode. But appreciate it all. Thank you all for tuning in. That'll do it for episode 668 of BD4. I'm your host, RJ, and I will see you in 669, which, unless we can get to a UFC episode, most likely 669 will be Knicks Sixers Game 1. We'll be recapping that game. If you haven't checked out 667, we did a preview for Knicks Philly. So check that one out. It's our most latest episode before this one. Very good. I got in depth to the X's and O's, and I talked a little bit about both sides of the ball. I talked about the rotation and whatnot. So check out our Knicks-Sixers preview if you're a basketball fan, Knicks fan. That's episode 667. It's on all platforms. But as for this one, 668, I appreciate you all, and I'll see you in the next show. Later. This episode was brought to you by Anchor.
Hey there! If you stayed the entire way through, we thank you immensely for it. We hope you enjoyed this podcast and that you come back for the next episode real soon. Don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, download these episodes, and share them with your friends as well. BD4 is a 5-star podcast simply because of you. And we'd like to keep it that way. Have a wonderful day. Go Yankees! And go Knicks!